It was an old tradition that away over there stood the Grey Havens, from which at times elven ships set sail, never to return. They're sailing, sailing, sailing over the sea. They're going into the west and leaving us, said Sam, half chanting the words, shaking his head sadly and solemnly. But Ted laughed.
Well, that isn't anything new, if you believe the old tales. And I don't see what it matters to me or you. Let them sail. But I warrant you haven't seen them doing it, nor anyone else in the Shire.
Well, I don't know, said Sam thoughtfully. He believed he had once seen an elf in the woods, and still hoped to see more one day. Of all the legends that he had heard in his early years, such fragments of tales and half-remembered stories about the elves as the hobbits knew had always moved him most deeply. There are some, even in these parts, as know the fair folk and get news of them, he said. There's Mr. Baggins now that I work for. He told me that they were sailing, and he knows a bit about elves. And old Mr. Bilbo knew more. Many's the talk I had with him when I was a little lad.
Ah, they're both cracked, said Ted. Leastways old Bilbo was cracked, and Frodo's cracking. If that's where you get your news from, you'll never want for moonshine. Well, friends, I'm off home. Your good health.
He drained his mug and went out noisily. Sam sat silent and said no more. He had a good deal to think about. For one thing, there was a lot to do up in the Bag End garden, and he would have a busy day tomorrow if the weather cleared. The grass was growing fast, but Sam had more on his mind than gardening. After a while he sighed and got up and went out. It was early April, and the sky was now clearing after the heavy rain. The sun was down, and a cool, pale evening was quietly fading into night. He walked home under the early stars through Hobbiton and up the hill, whistling softly and thoughtfully. It was just at this time that Gandalf reappeared after his long absence. For 3 years after the party he had been away. Then he paid Frodo a brief visit, and after taking a good look at him, he went off again. During the next year or two, he had turned up fairly often, coming unexpectedly after dusk, and going off without warning before sunrise. He would not discuss his own business and journeys, and seemed chiefly interested in small news about Frodo's health and doings. Then suddenly his visits had ceased. It was over 9 years since Frodo had seen or heard of him, and he had begun to think that the wizard would never return, and had given up all interest in hobbits. But that evening, as Sam was walking home and twilight was fading, there came the once familiar tap on the study window. Frodo welcomed his old friend with surprise and great delight. They looked hard at one another.
All well, eh? Said Gandalf. You look the same as ever, Frodo.
So do you, Frodo replied. But secretly he thought that Gandalf looked older and more careworn. He pressed him for news of himself and of the wide world, and soon they were deep in talk, and they stayed up far into the night. Next morning, after a late breakfast, the wizard was sitting with Frodo by the open window of the study. A bright fire was on the hearth, but the sun was warm, and the wind was in the south. Everything looked fresh, and the new green of spring was shimmering in the fields and on the tips of the trees' fingers. Gandalf was thinking of a spring nearly 80 years before, when Bilbo had run out of Bag End without a handkerchief. His hair was perhaps whiter than it had been then, and his beard and eyebrows were perhaps longer, and his face more lined with care and wisdom. But his eyes were as bright as ever, and he smoked and blew smoke rings with the same vigour and delight. He was smoking now in silence, but Frodo was sitting still, deep in thought. Even in the light of morning he felt the dark shadow of the tidings that Gandalf had brought. At last he broke the silence. "Last night you began to tell me strange things about my ring, Gandalf," he said. "And then you stopped, because you said that such matters were best left until daylight. Don't you think that you had better finish now? You say the ring is dangerous, far more dangerous than I guess. In what ways?"
"In many ways,"
answered the wizard. It is far more powerful than I ever dared to think at first, so powerful that in the end it would utterly overcome anyone of mortal race who possessed it. It would possess him. In a region long ago, many elven rings were made, magic rings, as you call them, and they were, of course, of various kinds, some more potent and some less. The lesser rings were only essays in the craft before it was full grown, and to the elven smiths they were but trifles, but still, to my mind, dangerous for mortals. But the great rings, the rings of power, they were perilous. A mortal, Frodo, who keeps one of the great rings, does not die, but he does not grow or obtain more life. He merely continues until at last every minute is a weariness. And if he often uses the ring to make himself invisible, he fades. He becomes, in the end, invisible permanently, and walks in the twilight under the eye of the dark power that rules the rings. Yes, sooner or later. Later, if he is strong or well-meaning to begin with, but neither strength nor good purpose will last, sooner or later the dark power will devour him.
How terrifying, said Frodo.
There was another long silence. The sound of Sam Gamgee cutting the lawn came in from the garden.
How long have you known this? Asked Frodo at length. And how much did Bilbo know?
Bilbo knew no more than he told you, I'm sure, said Gandalf. He would certainly never have passed on to you anything that he thought would be a danger, even though I promised to look after you. He thought the ring was very beautiful and very useful at need, and if anything was wrong or queer, it was himself. He said that it was growing on his mind, and he was always worrying about it. But he didn't suspect that the ring itself was to blame. Though he had found out that the thing needed looking after, it didn't seem always of the same size or weight. It shrank or expanded in an odd way, and might suddenly slip off a finger where it had been tight.
Yes, he warned me of that in his last letter, said Frodo. So I've always kept it on its chain.
Very wise, said Gandalf. But as for his long life, Bilbo never connected it with the ring at all. He took all the credit for that to himself, and he was very proud of it. Though he was getting restless and uneasy, thin and stretched, he said, a sign that the ring was getting control.
How long have you known all this? Asked Frodo again.
Known, said Gandalf. I've known much that only the wise know, Frodo. But if you mean known about this ring, well, I still do not know, one might say. There is a last test to make, but I no longer doubt my guess. When did I first begin to guess? He mused, searching back in his memory. Let me see, it was in the year that the White Council drove the Dark Power from Mirkwood, just before the Battle of Five Armies, that Bilbo found his ring. A shadow fell on my heart then, though I didn't know yet what I feared. I wondered often how Gollum came by a great ring, as plainly it was, that at least was clear from the first. Then I heard Bilbo's strange story of how he had won it, and I couldn't believe it. When I at last got the truth out of him, I saw at once that he had been trying to put his claim to the ring beyond a doubt, much like Gollum with his birthday present. The lies were too much alike for my comfort. Clearly the ring had an unwholesome power that set to work on its keeper at once. That was the first real warning I had that all was not well. I told Bilbo often that such rings were better left unused, but he resented it and soon got angry. There was little else that I could do. I could not take it from him without doing greater harm, and I had no right to do so anyway. I could only watch and wait. I might perhaps have consulted Saruman the White, but something always held me back.
Who is he? Asked Frodo. I've never heard of him before.
Maybe not, answered Gandalf. Hobbits are, or were, no concern of his. Yet he is great among the wise. He is the chief of my order and the head of the council. His knowledge is deep, but his pride has grown with it, and he takes ill any meddling. The Lord of the Elven Rings, great and small, is his province. has long studied it, seeking the lost secrets of their making. But when the rings were debated in the council, all that he would reveal to us of his ring lore told against my fears. So my doubt slept, but uneasily. Still I watched and I waited. And all seemed well with Bilbo. The years passed. Yes, they passed, and they seemed not to touch him. He showed no signs of age. The shadow fell on me again. But I said to myself, after all, he comes of a long-lived family on his mother's side. There is time yet. Wait. And I waited until that night when he left this house. He said and did things then that filled me with a fear that no words of Saruman could allay. I knew at last that something dark and deadly was at work, and I have spent most of the years since then in finding out the truth of it.
There wasn't any permanent harm done, was there? Asked Frodo anxiously. He would get all right in time, wouldn't he? Be able to rest in peace, I mean.
He felt better at once, said Gandalf. But there is only one power in this world that knows all about the rings and their effects. And as far as I know, there is no power in the world that knows all about hobbits. Among the wise, I am the only one that goes in for hobbit lore, an obscure branch of knowledge, but full of surprises. Soft as butter they can be, and yet sometimes as tough as old tree roots. I think it likely that some would resist the rings far longer than most of the wise would believe. I don't think you need worry about Bilbo. Of course he possessed the ring for many years and used it, so it might take a long while for the influence to wear off, before it was safe for him to see it again, for instance. Otherwise he might live on for years quite happily, just stop as he was when he parted with it. For he gave it up in the end of his own accord, an important point. No, I was not troubled about dear Bilbo any more once he had let the thing go. It is for you that I feel responsible. Ever since Bilbo left, I have been deeply concerned about you and about all these charming, absurd, helpless hobbits. It would be a grievous blow to the world if the dark power overcame the Shire. If all your kind, jolly, stupid bulgers, hornblowers, boffins, brace girdles, and the rest, not to mention the ridiculous Bagginses, became enslaved. Frodo shuddered.
But why should we be? He asked. And why should he want such slaves?
To tell you the truth, replied Gandalf, I believe that hitherto, mark you, he has entirely overlooked the existence of hobbits. You should be thankful. But your safety has passed. He doesn't need you. He has many more useful servants, but he won't forget you again. And hobbits as miserable slaves would please him far more than hobbits happy and free. There is such a thing as malice and revenge.
Revenge? Said Frodo. Revenge for what? I still don't understand what all this has to do with Bilbo and myself and our ring.
It has everything to do with it, said Gandalf. You don't know the real peril yet, but you shall. I wasn't sure of it myself when I was last here, but the time has come to speak. Give me the ring for a moment. Frodo took it from his breeches pocket, where it was clasped to a chain that hung from his belt. He unfastened it and handed it slowly to the wizard. It felt suddenly very heavy, as if either it or Frodo himself was in some way reluctant for Gandalf to touch it. Gandalf held it up. It looked to be made of pure and solid gold.
Can you see any markings on it? He asked.
No, said Frodo. There are none. It's quite plain, and it never shows a scratch or sign of wear.
Well, then, look.
To Frodo's astonishment and distress, the wizard threw it suddenly into the middle of a glowing corner of the fire. Frodo gave a cry and groped for the tongs, but Gandalf held him back.
Wait, he said in a commanding voice, giving Frodo a quick look from under his bristling brows.
No apparent change came over the ring. After a while, Gandalf got up, closed the shutters outside the window, and drew the curtains. The room became dark and silent, though the clack of Sam's shears, now nearer to the windows, could still be heard faintly from the garden.
For a moment the wizard stood looking at the fire. Then he stooped and removed the ring to the hearth with the tongs, and at once picked it up. Frodo gasped.
"It is quite cool," said Gandalf. "Take it."
Frodo received it on his shrinking palm. It seemed to have become thicker and heavier than ever.
"Hold it up," said Gandalf, "and look closely."
As Frodo did so, he now saw fine lines, finer than the finest pen strokes, running along the ring, outside and inside. Lines of fire that seemed to form the letters of a flowing script. They shone piercingly bright and yet remote, as if out of a great depth.
"I cannot read the fiery letters," said Frodo in a quavering voice.
"No," said Gandalf, "but I can. The letters are elvish, of an ancient mode, but the language is that of Mordor, which I will not utter here. But this in the common tongue is what is said close enough. One ring to rule them all, one ring to find them, one ring to bring them all, and in the darkness bind them. It is only two lines of a verse long known in elven lore. Three rings for the elven kings under the sky, seven for the dwarf lords in their halls of stone, nine for mortal men doomed to die, one for the dark lord on his dark throne in the land of Mordor where the shadows lie. One ring to rule them all, one ring to find them, one ring to bring them all, and in the darkness bind them in the land of Mordor where the shadows lie."
He paused, and then said slowly in a deep voice,
"This is the Master Ring, the one ring to rule them all. This is the one ring that he lost many ages ago to the great weakening of his power. He greatly desires it, but he must not get it."
Frodo sat silent and motionless. Fear seemed to stretch out a vast hand, like a dark cloud rising in the east and looming up to engulf him.
"This ring," he stammered. How on earth did it come to me?"
"Ah," said Gandalf, "that is a very long story. The beginnings lie back in the Black Years, which only the lore masters now remember. If I were to tell you all that tale, we should still be sitting here when spring had passed into winter. But last night I told you of Sauron the Great, the Dark Lord. The rumors that you have heard are true. He has indeed risen again and left his hold in Mirkwood and returned to his ancient fastness in the Dark Tower of Mordor. That name even you hobbits have heard of, like a shadow on the borders of old stories. Always after a defeat and a respite, the shadow takes another shape and grows again."
"I wish it need not have happened in my time," said Frodo.
"So do I," said Gandalf, "and so do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given us. And already, Frodo, our time is beginning to look black. The enemy is fast becoming very strong. His plans are far from ripe, I think, but they are ripening. We shall be hard put to it. We should be very hard put to it, even if it were not for this dreadful chance. The enemy still lacks one thing to give him strength and knowledge to beat down all resistance, break the last defenses, and cover all the lands in a second darkness. He lacks the one ring. The three, fairest of all, the elf lords hid from him, and his hand never touched them or sullied them. Seven the dwarf kings possessed, but three he has recovered, and the others the dragons have consumed. Nine he gave to mortal men, proud and great, and so ensnared them. Long ago they fell under the dominion of the One, and they became ringwraiths, shadows under his great shadow, his most terrible servants. Long ago. It is many a year since the Nine walked abroad. Yet who knows? As the shadow grows once more, they too may walk again. But come, we will not speak of such things even in the morning of the Shire. So it is now. The Nine he has gathered to himself, the Seven also, or else they are destroyed. The three are hidden still. But that no longer troubles him. He only